Communities Digital News, built by the writers and editors that deliver the news 24 hours a day. Visit comdiginews.com. That's comdiginews.com. And support the next evolution in news. You're listening to Standing at Freedom's Gate with your host, Kevin Fobbs, only on the Communities Digital News Hour.
Good evening, my friends. Welcome to Standing at Freedom's Gate on Community Digital News Hour. I'm your host, Kevin Fobbs. You can join in on the conversation right now and share your written comments or call in at 914-803-4460. That number again is 914-803-4460. You can also follow Community Digital News at our website at comdiginews.com. Okay, let's get right to it. Black America, it is at war with itself. And this war is a war that we appear as black people, as Americans, as those who live in urban areas across this nation. We are losing this war because tens of thousands of innocent victims are just being massacred in the streets. And this actually comes home to a lot of us on a very personal level, and especially my guest last week on Standing at Freedom's Gate, Kenneth McClinton, whose daughter was tragically murdered last Wednesday, on May 27th, and as an startling example of what the human carnage really represents for families who lose someone special, someone innocent in their home. And this is an eternal race war, my friends, an eternal race war that we are being impacted each and every moment. And when you think about how large this problem is, 93% of African Americans are murdered each year by other African Americans. And this is based upon a Bureau of Justice stats that were revealed in 2007. But those stats have remained constant over the last several years. And this war is actually something that we have to address right now. But more importantly, we have to address the solutions as well. So this week on Standing at Freedom's Gate, my guest Al Ashworth, who's an author, a business owner, and also guest host of the nationally syndicated Freedom's Journal radio show, will begin to deal with this deadly plague of black-on-black murders that is strangling the lifeblood of urban America, but also the solutions as well. Al, welcome to Standing at Freedom's Gate.
Kevin, I'm very honored to be on your show, of course, and of course I want to be thankful that you're having me on to be with your audience. And of course, I've been on today. I was on Lonnie's show, and as I was saying earlier, I'm primed and ready to go. So thank you again for having me on your show.
Well, Al, it's wonderful to have you, because this problem, as we talked before the show, this problem has been going on for decades and decades. And we talked earlier about my own involvement in a group, an organization called Save Our Sons and Daughters, exactly 30 years ago, that was started because families, parents especially, were losing babies and children at record rates, being murdered in the streets of the city of Detroit, and there had to be a solution to that problem. And fortunately, the community, that means the police department, that meant city council people, family members who had lost someone, people who just cared and were concerned, they came together to address that problem and actually were very successful in reducing this black-on-black crime to the point that President Reagan gave the organization an award for the work that they had done in helping to not just reduce crime, but strengthen the community as well.
You know, and we, of course, we did discuss this earlier, and we do know a common thread in this situation. Of course, the mother of one of the victims, of course, with the Soul Side, Clementine Barfield.
Right.
And I know her. And, of course, I'm an author, and she's also written a book called Home Training 101 was the name of her book. And it was discussing some of the things that people could do to sort of change the way they were parenting in these communities. And unfortunately, Kevin, we seem to be facing the same issues, and it's more prolific now. As you discussed 30 years ago, it was in some of these urban cities that were larger cities, but it spread to places like Ferguson and some of these outlying areas that you see now that the police departments are afraid to go into some of these communities. And my hope is that with you and others, and of course you mentioned Kenneth, and I met him in Washington, D.C. just a little over probably 12 days ago, and I'm hopeful that others will come together and do something to stem the tide on these young people that are losing their lives.
You know, what's interesting too, Al, is that I find that this black-on-black murder rate, which is devastating tens of thousands of lives across America, that it seems to be a not-so-secret secret for black leaders like President Obama, civil rights organizations like the NAACP or the Urban League, but they seem to be strangely and uniquely silent. Why have they treated this issue as if it were the third rail of politics?
You know, that's a great analogy that you use with the third rail in terms of the fear of being harmed. And I think what the problems that you just brought up so eloquently is that they're afraid of their losing their political clout. They're afraid of losing their political power. And, of course, with the election coming up so soon in 2016, this issue is being used as a political football. And you have to understand, and I think you do very well, is that the politics is being played largely from the left, and I also would say the right as well, but largely from the left has always been about victimization. It's about that victimization that they use to strike fear into these people that I call them the willfully ignorant. And I think that's what the issue is with that circumstance.
You know, and speaking of victimization, because I'm real big on this whole idea of standing up, because this is what I was taught. This is what I have been working with communities in the city of Detroit and all over the state of Michigan and some states as other states as well that I've been invited to come into. But I want you to take a look at this and listen to this these stats, because they're devastating. There's been a major spike in crime. Murders are up 117% in Milwaukee. Murders are up 50% in Atlanta. Murders are up 18% in Chicago. Shootings in Baltimore have jumped up 64%. This is what we call terrorism, Al. This is terrorism on a grand scale. And I just can't understand, I just can't even contemplate why there was a fear by the NAACP and the Urban League and President Obama to address this naked terrorism in urban America.
And you know, that is great. That's a great point. And what you just stated about the facts, I have learned that sometimes you cannot use facts when you're dealing with people and their emotions. And somehow you have to reason with them and get them to actually sit down and create dialogue so that you can sort of come up with solutions. But until they're willing to look at the facts and look at those hard numbers, it is hard to get them to admit that some of the policies that they have been doing for the last 50 years have contributed to this situation. And most of this has come about since 2006, as you just said. Some of these numbers are on the increase, and the FBI numbers they are what they are. You cannot get around it. Now, of course, we can look at the urban communities. We can look at the situation with education, health care, families, and it all comes back to personal responsibility. And the president has a duty and an obligation to tell the American people the truth, despite what his party would say. And, of course, you do this and I do it as well, and we take a lot of flack for doing so.
Well, you know, I'm not afraid. I'm going to tell you, I've been an organizer, I guess, all my life, and especially when I was an organizer in the city of Detroit. So I'm not afraid. What I am afraid is if when we don't stand up. What I am afraid of is when a young person tomorrow will be murdered. That's what I'm afraid of, because I don't mind being called Uncle Tom. I don't care about being called anything, to be honest. What I do care about is that the will of God, that means that the protection of the innocent be protected. And so if we can't do that, then we really are failing ourselves, I believe. And you know what? That's one of the things that is important, I think, Al, for all of us, because each one of us in America, in this country, we are entitled to the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Matter of fact, Reverend Martin Luther King marched about that for that very same right. This is a civil right for black people over a half century ago, Al. And why are we dodging that as, I think, urban Americans? Why do we dodge that right? You know, as you said, Al, the numbers, okay, let's put the numbers aside, but we do, when we wake up each morning, have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And I agree, and of course you brought up the Honorable Reverend Martin Luther King and what he was able to accomplish in the Civil Rights Movement. But let's not forget that there were also Jewish leaders and Catholic leaders and Protestant leaders that were also marching with the black community. And for whatever reason, our leaders have turned their back on those people, particularly the Jewish community. And I think that's one of the problems. We seem to have isolated ourselves and marginalized ourselves since the Civil Rights Movement. Now it's turned into a me movement, particularly for people like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. It's all about them, all about their promotion, or all about their organization. And the president of the United States is the president of the United States, not the president of just one community and not the president of just one generation.
And I agree with you, Al. And I think if we look at this and we move Al Sharpton to the side, and we move Jesse Jackson to the side, we should be looking at what King envisioned. Because I'm going to tell you, back in 1965, when President Johnson was president, approximately 7% of black families in America lived in single-parent households. Now, 50 years later, 70% and climbing live in single-parent households in urban America and black families. So as Clementine Barfield talked about in her book, she was the first official president of SOSAD and led that organization. This, one of those important, I think, ingredients that we have to deal with and that we must address as Americans, period, black, white, Jewish, whatever, and helping to identify where the system has broken down in the black community.
And of course, you brought up the 1965 Act, the Welfare Act, of course, and it was some part of the first civil rights legislation that was connected to the 1954 civil rights legislation that later led to the breakup of the family, from my perspective, because it removed the fathers, it made the government a daddy state. And since that time, we have seen a decline in the family unit and a rise in illiteracy, a falling back of the educational system. It's just a domino effect. And, of course, we can look at that now in retrospect and compare it to what we were before we had the right to vote. And I tell you, from my perspective, we were better off in a lot of ways.
Well, here's a question, too. And this is something that friends of mine have asked about as well, and that is, white people consider themselves, you know, they were part of this effort. Jewish and others were part of the civil rights movement in terms of Reverend King. Now they feel they've expressed this fear of being called racist. And is that something that we have to address to help assure them that it's all right to address these issues and that it's not being racist to do so, that actually it is being an American, a compassionate American, an understanding American, to actually begin to address with these issues and be a part of the solution?
You know, and of course, that ties into what I was saying earlier about the Catholics, the Jews, Jewish people, and the Protestants. This movement, the civil rights movement, would not have happened without those people being involved. The black community just did not have the organization that we needed on a broader sense nationally to address some of those issues. So it took the white community, per se, along with others, to propel that movement and use Martin Luther King as the spearhead of the movement. So I agree that we need those people. We can't continue to say, well, everybody's racist, just to say it, just to get a vote.
I'm with you, Al, on that. And I'm going to tell you something. That is something that we, as people who have either journalists covering it, those who have been part of the movement over the last 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, we understand that issue and we understand that problem. And I want to talk about solutions now. So we're going to take a quick break, Al. And when we come back, we're going to talk about solutions. And we're going to talk about solutions that can actually work. And we are not going to talk about reinventing the wheel. We're going to talk about solutions that have worked for 50 years, 40 years, 30 years, 20 years, and so on. And they can work today. So we're going to talk about those solutions when we come right back.
Go, guys!
Hey, did you guys know that kids who play sports earn more money when they grow up?
Of course. I knew that.
Hey, did you guys know that kids who read books have a bigger vocabulary?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Wow, jinx. Did you guys know that friendly children have more friends?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's true. I knew that. Did you guys know that winter babies are better at music?
Everyone knows that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, pretty obvious.
Yeah.
obvious. Oh, hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
Huh, I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure I knew that.
I'm pretty sure you didn't.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is the sound of a brand new outdoor grill being hurled off a 20-story building. Now a stylish glass coffee table. An electric guitar. These are the things you could enjoy all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Visit EnergySavers.gov and get tips on how to save energy and money. Then do things like switch to Energy Star light bulbs or Energy Star appliances, then you could save hundreds of dollars a year. So this doesn't happen to the recliner you've had your eye on, or this to the treadmill on your wish list, or this to the shiny new bike your kid's been asking for. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it," That's what Living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the community's Digital News Hour. Read the whole story 24 hours a day at our website, comdiginews.com. That's comdiginews.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back, my friends. You're listening to Standing at Freedom's Gate. I'm your host, Kevin Fobbs, and our guest, Alan Ashworth. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me again, Kevin, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak about such a serious subject.
You know, Al, we are, as I said earlier, we are at war. We really are at war with urban terrorism on a scale that we could never, ever have envisioned ever 50 years ago when Reverend Martin Luther King was leading the movement for civil rights for black people. This war actually is larger than any war that, if you measure the loss of lives in the Vietnam War, if you measure the loss of lives in terms of Afghanistan and Iraq combined, we have lost more black people over the last 10 to 15 years to this urban terrorism war than those wars combined. So I have to say again, President Obama, wake the heck up and do something and join in this effort to stem the tide of death in urban America. And Al, you know, we have solutions. These are time-tested solutions. We mentioned earlier, so sad as an organization, and we're going to address that in a moment. But I think, as you said, sometimes we have to be reminded, I guess, that there is emotion in this. So why not bring the emotion to it, put the numbers aside, but bring the emotion. Now, when I talk about emotion, I'm talking about faith. I'm talking about young people. I'm talking about babies who are killed innocently in drive-by shootings, 4- and 5-year-old kids being killed in drive-by shootings. But make them personal. They are our babies. They are our sisters. They are our daughters, our cousins. So is that the kind of personal, I guess, touch that has to be embraced in urban America to begin this, I guess, feeling inside that something has to be done, not tomorrow, not next week, but right now?
You know, I'm glad that you brought that up, because one of the things I remember growing up, of course, as a young person, they used to put the missing children on milk cartons. I don't know if you remember that.
Yep.
I'm sure you do. And it brought awareness to children that were just coming up missing. We need something similar, but it needs to be more in the social media networks, to where every tragedy is brought before the American people almost instantaneously.
I'm with you.
To where you would almost get an Amber Alert. 4-year-old was shot down by a drive-by. Because we tend to ignore these things because it becomes a statistic. It becomes a statistic. So we don't have that same emotional feeling. And the president could do something by doing something from the Oval Office, like a primetime speech, to kick this off, to start this program and put the people to work and put them in place, and you could have it up and running in a few months.
Well, I not only want to embrace that with you and with all of our listeners and with all of our friends across America, but I think this is a perfect example and a perfect opportunity that this kind of social media wall actually is built up and actually is developed. And we get started on that now. You know, and this is just one thing, but it's an important thing, because people have to feel an attachment, a bond with law. As you said, Al, when we were growing up, they put missing kids on milk cartons. So we felt that there was a connection to that child. And if we saw that child somewhere, we would be able to notify authority. Same thing as with an Amber Alert. And that is something that has to happen right now. And what I find pretty staggering about all of this, as we keep talking about solutions, right there in the city where Sharnice was murdered, in Washington, D.C., the representative to Congress, their representative to Congress, Eleanor Holmes Norton, is not saying anything. She's silent. Obama is silent. He was silent about Cleveland, the fact that Cleveland did not erupt in violence. He was silent about that. Isn't that something that he should have actually cherished inside and said, look, this is an example of a community that was working with community leaders and community supporters and the faith community and the police department and the civil rights organizations as well to not have violence. But the president of the United States, Obama, was silent, Al, and so has Eleanor Holmes Norton been silent too. This is a human travesty.
Well, they're not silent about giving accolades to Bruce Jenner, and they're not silent about lifting up the LGBT community. So I think it's a travesty, and I think it's appalling that they would not speak out, and especially the news media, that one of their own was shot and killed, whereas in a time of war, you would be able to recognize that person as someone that was part of that war. And I think the mainstream media has an obligation as well to look at these situations and bring this to light and bring this to the forefront.
I'm in agreement. I believe that the Washington Post is the only news organization besides Community Digital News that has covered this, and her own newspaper that has covered this. And I have to say that this loss of life, this loss of a very special person, it touches me as a journalist too. And I think that there, again, I believe that out of death comes life because it's biblical. So I think that one of the other solutions towards this is actually do something that we can all support, and that is training other young kids and teens to pursue her quest for knowledge and establishing a youth journalist program in cities across America, especially in those urban areas, because that's where Sharnice Milton was making an impact, in Washington, D.C., and in the neighborhoods that she covered. So I think this, again, is one more example of us getting involved as a people and as Americans, black, white, brown, yellow, whatever, but being able to actually bring honor to a person's life who actually perished, but her pursuit of her quest for knowledge, that will not perish, and we can do something about that now.
And I agree as well, and we need to empower the individual, because the most powerful minority is the power given to the individual under the Constitution. And, of course, through prayer and obedience, we can then return to the source. Of course, God's mercy and his grace is more than sufficient. And
absolutely.
So I think we need to look at those things in that perspective, that it's really the power of the individual, and that is where we need to start.
I am totally with you on that, because it has worked. It has worked because it is something that is from God. It has worked. As a matter of fact, if you think about it, part of SOSAD's mandate, if you will, was actually bringing in the faith community. Matter of fact, when we held our meetings, they were held in churches, they were held in community centers, they were held in homes, but each and every time we actually gave thanks to God, to Jesus Christ, and we asked God in Christ to give us direction so that we could have an impact, so that we could save our sons and daughters and save the city as well. So this is an important ingredient. It is something that must be part of a solution for urban America and to help address these challenges, and especially these senseless homicides in urban areas across the nation.
And, of course, I concur with what you just said, and we're constantly here talking about this every day, of course, on the networks, your network, and, of course, the one that I'm associated with. And we must continue to realize that everyone that's out here today that's looking for solutions, they need to know where to meet and where to come to and how to get in contact with someone. So we need to be better organized if we're going to address these issues going forward, because in 18 months, President Obama will be out of office and we'll have a new president and a new situation to look forward to. So I'm hoping that we will continue to pray and ask one another to forgive. You know, forgiveness is a huge part of God acting. You know, we can tend to forget about that. So if the black community cannot learn to forgive, not just themselves, but forgive past tragedies and past injustices, we cannot move forward.
Exactly. And, you know, I want to update something that I mentioned earlier in the show about the media, because, again, we were talking about the responsibility of the media and its coverage of this tragic loss of Sharnice Milton. And we actually have The Root, which actually covered it 3 days ago. The New York Daily News covered it 5 days ago. NBC Washington, the affiliate, WRC-TV, covered her death 5 days ago. And, of course, I mentioned earlier, The Washington Post covered both 5 and 6 days ago. So I just want to make certain that you're up to date on the media. It's more than I mentioned earlier, but we need a lot more, because the loss was not just a loss of a journalist, loss of a daughter, but it was a loss to all of us. And so the media, again, the response and the responsibility, Al, as you said, is for more coverage of what is happening in urban America. And to that end, by the establishing, we had So Sad, So, again, prayed about it, Al. And I think that all of us can join perhaps together in this Save Our Urban Lives, or Soul America. That Save Our Urban Lives, or S-O-U-L, Soul America. And again, this is a way for all of us to get involved and work with and support the families of victims, but bring an end to the senseless homicide across America and bring a return to the vibrant neighborhoods and cities that existed before this almost like marauding, senseless virus or epidemic came into existence in America, Al.
You know, I know this is for another show, but it also ties in that we have to learn that we need to protect the unborn as well. You know, especially with the 34% of all abortions that's carried out are being carried out against black babies. And that's another issue and another place we need to be bold, and we need to be able to stand up and speak out. And, you know, as I was saying earlier today on Ronnie's show, you know, it's amazing how we will stand up for our football teams and our sports teams and all these things. We'll defend them against anything. But we're talking about the lives of children that's being taken away from their families so tragically and so quickly. You know, to imagine that your child could be here this morning and gone the next afternoon, it's just unacceptable that we set back. And something can be done, but we don't seem to have the same energy to do something in those circumstances.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Al, we're going to have that energy because we're going to reclaim that energy, not just in terms of talking about it, because I understand the importance of talking about it and sharing the truth, but I also understand the importance of being active. And that's, again, Save Our Urban Lives, or Soul America, is something. We're saving ourselves in this kind of effort. And there'll be more about this. I'm going to write about it on Community Digital News, but I'm also going to be inviting others who are active and those who just want to help, because we actually owe it to ourselves. These are Americans. These are Americans who are dying in our streets in urban America. These are our children. These are our family members who are dying in these streets. And as you said, Al, we get more excited about a football score or a baseball score. Well, you know what? Let's get that energy back where it belongs, with families. Let's bring the faith community, because there is a huge responsibility that the faith community has. It is not just on Sunday. It is not just in those four walls. It is outside in the community, working with, praying with, playing with, but being a part of the essence of who we are in America. We are Americans. We protect each other. We stand up for each other, Al. And I think this is where we begin.
You know, and we need to restore the family. Of course, if I can add to what you just said, we need to restore the family by giving incentives for them to, for the ones to leave, who choose to leave, that plantation called welfare. Our fathers need to be back into the homes, and by doing so, we can help them in this entitlement nightmare and continue by doing something we call workfare. And what I wanted to bring to the table was, you know, let them keep part of their welfare even though they start a job. So it gives them this buffer from the time they leave this welfare program to get a job, and it's not like just cutting them off as if no one cares. But the fathers have to be involved, and they have to be in the home. That is the very strength of the family, the role of the fathers.
Al, you're speaking to the choir. You're speaking to the choir because it does work. It has worked in urban settings all across the nation. I was on the board for the Family Services Agency in Michigan, in Wayne County, and it worked because it gave families a hand up, not a hand out, but a hand up. It brought families together. It brought fathers back into the home. It allowed individuals to have this sense of vibrancy so that they didn't feel shame or they didn't feel like they were shut out or put out or kept out by the system, that they actually could do something, that they could learn, they could become educated, they could get a job and hold a job. And this was a way to help them find themselves. So I'm in 100% agreement with you on this. And this is, again, another component of how we begin to address and solve this problem in urban America.
You know, and one last point, I guess, on this issue of solutions, I want to bring up what you just said was about education. You know, with Common Core being part of this new standard, that situation is going to leave even more children disenfranchised because their parents are not going to be able to help them. The ones who even want to help won't be able to help with these situations because it's so convoluted, it's so full of confusion. And it's meant to be this way, I believe, because you have a whole segment of society who want to take your child and your grandchildren from cradle to grave, and they want to inculcate them with this new idea that government can solve all of their problems.
Well, I am with you again, and it's no surprise because we think alike, Al, and I'm going to be with you in the trenches again. And I'm going to be with you and all others who believe that this nation can survive and that urban America can thrive as well. And we don't need government. You know what? It's like we need government to get out of the way. That's what we need. But we need families to understand that the strength of the family, the strength of a community actually is within the individual, as you said, Al. And we marry that, and I use that word seriously, marry that with the faith in religion, and that religion, I mean, I'm talking about God and Christ, and I believe those who, in the black community, who have felt that they were somehow put out, who felt that somehow they have been abandoned, this day is new, starting right now. And I want to say that very seriously, because starting right now, we're going to start building this effort, because it is concrete. Words are important, but actions, as it says in the Bible, are even more important. Words and actions combined, that brings, again, a revolution in the community. And Al, I want to ask you, this is the last question. What are the three most important steps that you think should be taken to eliminate black-on-black homicide in urban America?
Well, first of all, we must be honest with ourselves. We must start looking at ourselves and not be so willing to just point the finger at others on the outside of our communities. That's number one. First, you must admit that you have a problem. You know, one of the things, if you're dealing with substance abuse or if you're dealing with alcoholism or if you're dealing with some type of issue in that area, the first thing they tell you that, first of all, you must say and admit that you have a problem.
Right.
If you're not willing to do that, you're just going to return to that same issue. So until we admit that we have a problem, number one, and until we stop blaming others, number two, and until we start forgiving, if we don't start forgiving, there is no room for God's mercy and his grace to take that action that you spoke of called faith, because faith is truly an action. It's truly an action based on your belief.
Right. Amen. Amen. Thank you, Alan. Al, what are some of the ways that our listeners can contact you?
Of course, they can contact me through my website, which is www.alphonso, that's A-L-P-H-O-N-S-O, Ashworth.com. And through that website, they can connect to my Facebook page. They can email me. Of course, they can keep up with some of the material that I write, of course, as an author. And of course, I'm always open to talking. And, you know, if they want to talk to me on air, if they're an organization that wants to question or have my thoughts, I'll be glad to participate.
And, Al, we're going to have you back because you've been a fantastic, fantastic guest. And your words are always, always moving, inspiring, and knowledgeable. And I think that's something that all of us can truly appreciate.
You know, and I appreciate it. And thank you, Kevin, for having me on the show. And, of course, I'm looking forward to taking part in other activities that you may be a part of.
Well, I look forward to having you with all of us in this great effort to rejuvenate and actually bring back the life force of faith in urban America. Thank you, Al, for being on Standing at Freedom's Gate.
Thank you.
Be sure to join in on the conversation each and every Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another opportunity to be part of News in Action. That's right. That's right. News in Action. Standing at Freedom's Gate on Community Digital News Hour. And remember, you can make a difference by being the difference for freedom. Good night and God bless.
Community Digital News reaches more than 1 million readers and listeners of the ComDigi News Hour every month. Contact us at 301-503-4533. That's 301-503-4533 for sponsorship and advertising information. ComDigi News, where we tell the whole story 24 hours a day.